from the studios of Free Radio Santa Cruz. You're listening to Earth First Radio. Stay tuned for No Compromise news, views, poetry, and music.
You're cutting chainsaws, killing the trees, something, everything that lives in peace. Our animal friends are on the run, but there's nowhere to go when the job is done. How can we stand by while this all takes place? We've got to stop this inhuman race.
And welcome to Earth First Radio. I'm Uncle Dennis. Each week I bring you No Compromise news, views, poetry, and music for activists on the front lines of the environmental movement. In the news, you'll hear about corporations, government agencies, and people who are killing the planet, and about the folks who have detailed information on saving what's left. They all have names, addresses, phone numbers, fax numbers, email, or web addresses, so please get a pencil or pen and some recycled paper to write down the information, because this isn't couch potato radio. It's activist radio, and I'm asking you to take down the information and act on it. You really can make a difference by writing letters, sending faxes, and making phone calls when you aren't out in the woods, up in a tripod or a tree sit, or locked down in that dragon at the road blockade. If you have information, news, comments, or announcements for Earth First Radio News, please keep your pencil handy and listen for the contact information at the end of the show. I might say that Earth First Radio News will broadcast first on January 8th. It's a 5-minute per day Monday through Friday news broadcast, and that's what's going to be happening to Earth First Radio. This is the last hour-long Earth First Radio show. I want to say that it's been a real ride here, 5-plus years of sitting down in the chair at 8 o'clock every evening and bringing you news for an hour has been a challenge, and it's also been a burden, but it's a burden that I've borne gladly. I'm going to shake it off. We're going to change the format and make something a little bit easier on Uncle Dennis's life to do. That's starting January 8th, Earth First Radio News, a 5-minute, 5-day-a-week environmental action news show. I urge you and any stations around the country to pick up the new format, find a place for it in your schedule, let me know so that I can let other folks know when it will be on in your area. Let's get right on into the news here. A $15,000 reward has been offered for apprehension of wolf killers. The Center for Biological Diversity has announced a $5,000 reward for information leading to the apprehension and conviction of those responsible for a recent spate of Mexican gray wolf killings in Arizona and New Mexico. This money will be paid on top of the $10,000 reward already offered by the United States Fish and Wildlife Service. The captive-born Mexican wolves have made nearly flawless adaptations to life in the wild. The only barrier to success is continued human interference with their natural propensity to roam and explore. Despite multiple concessions on the part of wolf advocacy groups to meet the objections of those opposed to the recovery of the Mexican gray wolf, wolves are disappearing suspiciously and being shot or killed in hit-and-run incidents. 4 wolves have been confirmed killed in approximately the last month, paralleling the fall 1998 shootings in quick succession of at least 5 of the initial 11 wolves released. Those rewards by the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, the Center for Biological Diversity, and other nonprofit groups led to the conviction in October of last year of James Michael Rogers of Eager, Arizona, in one of the 1998 shootings. Rogers served 4 months in prison and 6 months under house arrest. He is on supervised probation for the next 2.5 years and must complete 50 hours of community service. Once again, $15,000 has been offered as a reward for the apprehension of wolf killers in Arizona and New Mexico. We want to thank the Center for Biological Diversity, their website, www.biologicaldiversity.org. These folks are fabulous. They do a really great job. You should support them if you can. The Center for Biological Diversity, www.biologicaldiversity.org. And moving to an organization with a less than wonderful reputation, the United States Department of Agriculture, APHIS Division, has made a proposal to poison millions of blackbirds in North Dakota and South Dakota. This poisoning will impact endangered species as well as ancillary wildlife and birds. APHIS is an agency of the United States federal government, has been engaged in poisoning and slaughter of wildlife in the United States for many years. Their current proposal to poison millions of blackbirds is under docket number 01-013-3. That's 01-013-3 with the regulatory analysis and development section. You can email your comments to stop this chemical poisoning of birds and wildlife to regulations@aphis.usda.gov. That's regulations@aphis.usda.gov. And Uncle Dennis urges you to do that immediately. Moving to other news of the wild, you can get in trouble for cutting down trees. A logger gets 8 months for cutting down trees, noting that it's difficult to place a value on 100-year-old trees. A judge rejected a recommendation for leniency and sentenced a logger to 8 months in prison for chopping down 112 trees in the Wayne National Forest of Washington. Trees have an intrinsic value beyond their commercial value, said U.S. District Judge Edmund A. Sargas Jr. told Larry Blair, 42. Last August, Blair pleaded guilty to two theft-related charges. His crew illegally logged trees 4 years ago from a nationally protected forest 100 miles southwest of Columbus, Blair admitted. He took them to a Cambridge hardware store where the trees were cut into 28,610 board feet of lumber. Blair had a contract to log trees on private property abutting the forest, but he ordered his crew to tear down ribbons that marked the boundary between the forest and the private land. His men then began chopping down trees in about 8 acres of forest land. The illegal logging was temporarily halted by the United States Forest Service officials after they warned Blair. However, Blair's crew resumed logging several days later. The illegally cut trees included maples and red and white oaks, some up to 100 years old. This is very serious conduct, Judge Sargas said in rejecting a recommendation from federal probation officers that Blair be sentenced to 6 months in a halfway house. In a halfway house, Blair would have been able to work and run errands on weekdays. On weekends and nights, he would have been required to stay in the halfway house. Instead, Sargas sentenced Blair to 8 months in prison. After his release, Blair will be on 3 years of supervised release, a federal version of parole. During that time, he will be prohibited from being in the logging business. Sargas also ordered Blair to pay the government $7,520 in restitution for the value of the trees and the cost of restoring the 8 acres of national forest land. It's important that environmental crimes are treated with the same seriousness as other criminal cases, said Assistant U.S. Attorney Michael Maroos, who prosecuted the case after sentencing. And we'd like to thank Robert Ruth of the Columbus Dispatch, and I guess this was in Ohio. The news came to us from the Leavenworth Adoptive Forest in Pashton, Washington, and we want to thank Pat Rasmussen for sending that news along. Pat's been a contributor over the years. We appreciate his input. And more news of the United States Forest Service. They have issued directives that appear to make it easier for the timber and mining industries to build new roads in national forests. Major environmental organizations characterized the directives published in the Federal Register recently as weakening a Clinton administration rule, that's the roadless rule, that would have banned logging and mining in roadless areas of national forests and grasslands. The Forest Service officials said the agency's basic commitment to protecting the nation's 58.5 million acres of inventoried roadless areas remains unchanged, but the new policy eliminates the requirement that there must be a compelling need to build new roads in roadless areas. It also eliminates the requirement of an environmental impact statement before building a road in a roadless area. The effect of the new directives will be to give local folks control over national land, a reversion to the same policies that have resulted in the destruction of our national forests, said Jane Danowitz, executive director of Heritage Forest Campaign. The Bush administration is reneging on its promise to protect our national forests, said Danowitz, whose organization represents several conservation organizations, including National Audubon, Natural Resources Defense Council, and Earth Justice. Forest Service spokesperson Heidi Valetkovich said critics of the directive seem to be overreacting. Not in Uncle Dennis's opinion, but back to the story. The word compelling was removed from the policy because it is ambiguous. The intent is still there. And Forest Service Chief Dale Bosworth's June 7th declaration of intent to protect roadless areas still controls the agency's actions, he said. The chief hasn't approved any projects in roadless areas since June, Voleskovich said. Jay Watson, Western Regional Director of the Wilderness Society, said that despite the Forest Service's attempt to lay down or to play down their effect, the changes are huge. Eliminating the requirement of an environmental impact statement means that roadless areas are going to be roaded without the national policy to protect them. Environmentalists also worry that directives will eliminate special protection for uninventoried roadless areas greater than 1,000 acres that are adjacent to inventoried roadless areas or wilderness areas and create a new loophole for logging old-growth forests. On January 12th of this year, the Clinton administration adopted a roadless area rule that was cheered by conservationists and criticized by logging, mining, and grazing interests. Lawsuits ensued, and on May 10th, a federal judge in Idaho enjoined implementation of the rule. On May 4th, Agriculture Secretary Ann Veneman said Bosworth announced that the Bush administration would uphold the roadless rule, but in July, the administration decided not to appeal the judge's decision and reopened the issue for public comment and further study. The announced policies will remain in effect for 18 months, and we want to thank Eric Brazil, a Chronicle staff writer, for that. And we have a little amplification of this as to actually what you can do about it. There was no mention that you could do anything about the proclamation, but here, Forest Service directives attempt to open up roadless areas. Comments on that policy due February 19th. On December 14th, the Forest Service implemented several new interim objectives that would continue the Bush administration's efforts to undermine protections put in place by the Clinton administration, including the National Forest Roadless Area Conservation Rule. On the day that the Clinton policy was adopted by the Forest Service last January 12th, a new transportation policy was implemented that included additional protections for areas not covered by the Roadless Conservation Rule. Under the smokescreen of the need to reduce redundancies in the rules, directives are a plain and simple attempt to reopen our National Forest Roadless Areas to logging. Once again, these directives will last 8 months. The new directives eliminate the requirement that there must be a compelling need to build roads in roadless areas, gives the Forest Service added discretion to determine if an environmental impact statement will be needed, and all small and uninventoried roadless areas that border wilderness or inventoried areas will lose special protection. It will weaken protection of old growth in roadless areas. And under these directives, logging and road building projects in roadless areas are subject to the approval of the Forest Service chief or regional foresters until local forest managers complete a vague roads analysis that would meet a lower standard, that a road meets a documented need and the forest plans were updated. Forests with revised plans, such as Alaska's Tongass National Forest, are exempt from chief-level review. Earlier this year, the state of Idaho and several timber corporations, including Boise Cascade Corporation, brought suits to stop the protection of over 58 million acres of roadless national forest land that would result if the Clinton policy were put in force. The resolution of those legal battles may take years, but in the meantime, the Bush administration is seeking other ways to eliminate the protections. Just this week, Forest Chief Dale Bosworth and Agriculture Undersecretary Mark Ray used fire salvage and restoration loopholes to open up over 46,000 acres with over 50% in roadless wildlands and endangered fish habitat in Montana's Bitterroot National Forest. The 60-day comment period on the new directives was announced in the Federal Register on December 20th. So comments are due by February 19th. Send your comments on the road policy to USFSCAT, Attention Road Policy, P.O. Box 221150, Salt Lake City, Utah, 84122. Once again, your comments should be postmarked by February 19th. Send them to USFSCAT, Attention Roadless Policy, P.O. Box 221150, Salt Lake City, Utah, 84122. If you want to send email, send that to roads_id@fs.fed.us. That's roads_id@fs.fed.us. In your note, please mention the roads policy. Okay, here's some things to put in your letter. Please demand that the Forest Service cease any attempts to undermine protections on our National Forest roadless areas as provided by the Roadless Area Conservation Rule and the transportation policy adopted in January of 2001. Urge the Forest Service and administration not to renege on their promise to uphold protections for roadless areas. 3. Our national forests contain over 383,000 miles of roads already, And the maintenance backlog on that road system now exceeds $8 billion worth of repairs required. The Forest Service should eliminate roads, not build new ones. Four, these directives contain the Forest Service continue the Forest Service policy of turning over all roadless area management decisions to local forest planning processes, which has favored logging and other development of roadless areas. This marks a return to the same failed management policy that created the need for the roadless area conservation rule in the first place. John Demos of the American Lands Alliance thanks you for taking time to submit comments. Thank you, John, for bringing them up. And moving to some animal news here, the North Atlantic right whale mothers are dying out. The North Atlantic right whale as a species is predicted to become extinct within 200 years if environmental conditions continue as they have prevailed since 1995 along the east coast of North America. These rarest of the world's large whales live in Atlantic waters from the coast of northern Florida to the Bay of Fundy off eastern Canada. Right whale females and calves are most often seen in winter off the coast of Florida and Georgia, their only known calving ground. Pursued as the, quote, right whale to catch by the 18th and 19th century whalers, fewer than 300 North Atlantic right whales remain today. This critically endangered whale population is losing its reproductive strength because the females are dying at an unprecedented rate, according to whale biologists from the Woods Hole Oceanographic Institution. Study co-authors Masami Fujiwara and Hal Coswell report that in the current issue of the journal Nature that the population growth rate of North Atlantic right whales has declined, quote, below replacement level because of increased mortality rates of female whales. Because the population is so small, a single death represents a significant mortality rate, said Caswell, a senior scientist at the institution. Just preventing the deaths of two females a year and maintaining survival of the rest can make a huge difference. Survival rates for male North Atlantic right whales have remained steady over the last 20 years, but the female whales are in trouble. The female survival rate, especially for females that have just given birth, is going down at what Fujiwara and Caswell call an alarming rate, and they're not sure why. The authors say that during the 1980s, the life expectancy of female North American right whales was twice that of males. Female life expectancy, however, has declined from about 50 years in 1980 to less than 15 years in 1995. As a consequence, the expected number of reproductive events during a female whale's lifetime has declined from 5 in 1980 to just 1 in 1995. A mature female could be expected to reproduce 6 times, but now that number is less than 2, says Fujiwara, a student at the MIT Woods Hole Oceanographic Institute Joint Graduate Program in Oceanography and Applied Ocean Sciences and Engineering. Just saving 2 females a year from death can have a huge impact on this population. Using computer data based on more than 10,000 photographed sightings to construct right whale population models, the WHOI team predicts that extinction of this population, now less than 300 whales, could occur within 200 years. To come to their conclusion, Fujiwara and Coswell used more than 10,000 sightings of photographically identified individual whales collected by the New England Aquarium between 1980 and 1996 to estimate trends in the right whale population. Individual right whales can be recognized by natural markings such as scars and the pattern of bumps called callosities on their heads. Fujiwara and Caswell then used these estimates to construct population models, which shows the survival probability for mothers in serious decline compared to that for other females and males. Right whale conservation efforts are aimed at reducing mortality due to entanglement in fishing gear and ship collisions. Availability of food due to climate fluctuations, such as the North Atlantic Oscillation, a major regional climate pattern that's just beginning to be understood, are also suspected of causing whale mortality. The authors say studies of the effects of all three factors on the populations are urgently needed because there is still a chance to help save this whale population. The declining trend in the survival of mothers is real and is a great concern, Fujiwara says. However, we are encouraged by the unprecedented calf production this last spring. We found a positive growth rate in the early 1980s. This tells us that there is every reason to hope that prompt management intervention can improve the survival enough to permit the recovery of the North Atlantic right whale. And we thank the Environment News Service for that story. And here's an update. Uncle Dennis told you about the hearings down in Los Angeles to list the California tiger salamander as a protected species. However, on December 7th, the California Fish and Game Commission voted 2-1 to refuse to accept the petition to list the California tiger salamander and refuse to protect the species as a candidate for listing either. The commission ignored the recommendation of the Department of Fish and Game. Every academic scientist who has studied the species, the commission's own legal counsel, and the legal standard for accepting petitions in reaching its determination. The commission's action was clearly illegal and will be challenged in court by the Coalition for Biological Diversity. The CBD is also working to obtain emergency federal listing for the Sonoma County population of the California tiger salamander. A decision on that should be forthcoming soon. The center will continue to do everything possible to obtain protection for the California tiger salamander and its habitat as soon as possible, and we thank the Center for Biological Diversity for that story. And moving to Florida, a court has protected the Florida black bear. The U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service must reconsider its refusal to list the Florida black bear under the Endangered Species Act under a court ruling issued earlier in this month by the U.S. District Court. The conservation group Defenders of Wildlife called the decision a significant victory for the bear. The decision came as a result of a lawsuit brought by the Defenders of Wildlife, the Fund for Animals, Sierra Club, and several individuals that challenged a 1998 decision by the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service that the Florida black bear did not qualify for listing as a threatened species under the Act. The court found that the service failed to adequately justify its decision not to list the Florida black bear under ESA, and in particular, that the agency had failed to establish that the bear was adequately protected by other federal and state laws, said Michael Senator, litigation director for the Defenders of Wildlife. As a result, the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service will now have to reconsider its prior decision as well as any new scientific information and render a new listing determination. In 1990, co-plaintiff Inga Hutchinson petitioned the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service to list the black bear under the ESA. In response to the petition, the agency conducted a status review of the bear and in 1992 concluded that the bear qualified as a threatened species because of habitat destruction, hunting, poaching, and other human-induced mortality. But by 1997, the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service had still failed to place the bear on the endangered species list. In 1997, the Fund for Animals, Defenders of Wildlife, and others reached a settlement agreement with USFWS, under which the agency agreed to render a final decision on December 31st of 1998. However, on December 8th, 1998, the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service issued a decision that the bear did not qualify for listing. The court recently said the service could not show that state and federal programs were adequately protecting the Florida bear, said Lori McDonald, Defenders Director of the Florida Programs. Without rules that help black bears in their habitat, we will continue to wipe out the woods and roll the asphalt over areas where bears' tracks should appear. The U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service cannot leave the imperiled Florida black bear in limbo while trophy hunters are chomping at the bit to set their sights on this rare species, added Michael Markarian, Executive Vice President of the Fund for Animals. Anything less than a threatened listing would be playing Russian roulette with the Florida black bear population, and we thank the Environment News Service for that story. We're going to take a little musical break here. We're going to listen to Dana Lyons. This one's called Cows with Guns.
Fat and docile, big and dumb, they look so stupid, they aren't much fun. Cows aren't fun. They eat to grow, grow to die, die to be et at the hamburger fry. Cows well done. Nobody thunk it, nobody knew, no one imagined the great cow guru. Cows are one. He hid in the forest, read books with great zeal. He loved Che Guevara, a revolutionary veal. Cows say tongue. He spoke about justice, but nobody stirred. He felt like an outcast, alone in the herd. Cowed all drums. He mooed, we must fight, escape or we'll die. Cows gathered around because the stakes were so high. Bad cow pun. But then he was captured, stuffed into a crate, loaded onto a truck where he rode to his fate. Cows are bummed. He was a scrawny calf who looked rather woozy. No one suspected he was packing an Uzi. Cows with guns. They came with a needle to stick in his thigh. He kicked for the groin. He pissed in their eye. Cow well hung. Knocked over a tractor and ran for the door. 6 gallons of gas flowed out on the floor. Run, cows, run. He picked up a bullhorn and jumped up on the hay. We are free-roving bovines. We run free today. We will fight for bovine freedom and hold our large heads high. We will run free with the buffalo or die. Cows with guns. They crashed the gate in a great stampede, tipped over milk truck, torched all the feed. Cows have fun. 60 police cars were piled in a heap, covered in cow pies, covered up deep. Much cow dung. Black smoke rising, darken in the day, 12 burning McDonald's, have it your way. We will fight for bovine freedom and hold our large heads high. We will run free with the buffalo or die. Cows with guns. The president said, enough is enough, these uppity cattle, it's time to get tough. Cow dung flung. The newspapers gloated, folks sighed with relief. Tomorrow at noon, they would all be ground beef. Cows on buns. The cows were surrounded, they waited and prayed. They mooed their last moos, they chewed their last hay. Cows outgunned. The order was given to turn cows to whoppers, enforced by the might of 10,000 coppers. But on the horizon, surrounding the shoppers, came the deafening roar of chickens in choppers. We will fight for bovine freedom and hold our large heads high. We will run free with the buffalo or die. Cows with guns.
And Earth First Radio will be right back. Stay tuned.